sounded sullen. The Wookiee laughed.
We'll see how funny you think this is when we're rotting in some Imperial detention cell. This was never the plan, pal.
The engines shifted subtly, almost imperceptibly, but both of them felt it, and both of them straightened up in their seats. Chewbacca already reaching overhead to lock in the acceleration compensators, as Solo reached forward to throttle back out of hyperspace. There was no need to talk. They'd done this 1,000 times. You could tell the quality of a crew by how they handled this maneuver. There were pilots who earned very comfortable livings, flying rich passengers here and there, solely on the basis of how smoothly they could switch from hyperspace back to real space, without spilling their passengers' drinks. Only the very best could manage it seamlessly. Solo eased the throttle handles back, cutting power on each engine in concert and watching as the end of the hyperspace tunnel suddenly ran toward them. A field of stars and the glow of the atmosphere of Sirkon coming into focus. At the same time, Chewbacca linked into the sublights, and Solo felt the Falcon catch, caught in space, as if trying to determine which way to go, eager to keep running. He nudged her, reversed the throttle on two of the engines, felt the ship yielding, then brought the remaining throttles back up. All at once, the tunnel was gone, and they were looking at Sirkon, brown, red, and gold beneath them. They'd done it flawlessly. The Emperor himself couldn't have complained. Solo actually grinned, forgetting his bad mood for an instant. Then the Falcon's proximity alarm started shrieking, and the bad mood came back as Solo twisted in his seat to silence it.
What?
He demanded, more of the ship than of his co-pilot.
What?
Chewbacca barked, twisting one of the dials on the sensor array, then slapping the aft view camera to life. Solo stared at the image on the tiny monitor embedded in the control console and tried to keep his jaw from dropping.
You've got to be kidding me.
Chewbacca snuffed at him, cocking his head.
Yes, Chewie, I think they see us.
There was a crackle from the speakers in the cockpit, the open communications channel springing to life.
This is the Star Destroyer Vehement.
The voice had all the arrogance and entitlement Solo had come to expect from an Imperial officer.
Unknown YT-1300, identify yourself and state your business on Sirkon.
Solo reached for the headset, holding it to one ear as he gestured to Chewie. But he needn't have bothered. His co-pilot was already half out of his seat, reaching under one of the consoles to his starboard for the case full of ship aliases they used for the Falcon. Every ship in the galaxy had, built in as part of its core construction, an identity that was broadcast to other ships that came near enough, called the Identification Friend or Foe, or IFF transponder. It was a unique ID, theoretically impossible to alter, and never mind that it was positively criminal even to try. That hadn't stopped the original owners of the Falcon from doing so, and in the intervening years, Solo and Chewbacca had built on the already considerable library of aliases for the ship, so that now they had quite literally hundreds of false names, and the documentation to go with them.
Well, hello there,
Solo said. He discovered that he had affected a definite twang and decided to run with it.
Lovely day, isn't it, Vehement?
Chewie had the case open on his lap and was pulling data cubes. He held up one to Solo, looking at him quizzically. Plugged in, it would say the Falcon was a ship called Jinden Smoke, running charter for a family named Dweer. Solo shook his head.
Unknown YT-1300, we repeat. Identify and state your business on Sirkon, or you will be boarded. You have 10 seconds to comply.
Now, that's no way to greet someone,
Solo said. Chewie held up another two cubes, one that would say they were the Broken Bell carrying hydraulic replacement parts for heavy binary lifters, the other calling them Foul Matter, which was carrying, appropriately enough, sanitation supplies. Solo again shook his head, this time more vigorously, and followed it with a look that said plainly they didn't have time. time for this. Chewbacca threw up his hands, dropped the cubes, and rummaged around for more.
You talk that way to all the ships that come across your bow?
Unknown YT-1300, you have 5 seconds to comply. Broadcast your transponder identification and state your business on Sircon.
Now rein in your EOPs,
Solo said.
Got it right here.
There's something going on down there that...
3 seconds! 2 seconds!
Chewbacca held up a final cube, and even before Solo could identify it, slammed it home into its receiver on the console, pounding the transmit button at almost the same instant.
You all should have it now, Vehement,
Solo said. There was a pause, nothing but silence over the open channel. Solo and Chewbacca stared at each other. If the identity was rejected, or worse, identified as false, they'd be facing an Imperial Star Destroyer at point-blank range. At best, they might be able to evade long enough to make the jump back to lightspeed, but the mission would have failed before it had truly begun. Never mind that there was already a Star Destroyer orbiting Sircon. There was a good chance they'd arrive too late anyway.
We identify you as Lost and Found, Captain Causal Dridge. State your business and cargo.
Yep, that's me, Solo said. Just heading down to refuel and get a little R&R is all. Understand there's a cantina out on the south side of Motok. You know, the capital, where they have the cutest little Twi'lek dancers you've ever...
Your perversions are of no interest to us, Captain Dridge. In future, you are advised to transmit your ship identification immediately upon exiting hyperspace. You are free to go about your business. Vehement out.
There was a click as the communications channel closed. Solo and Chewbacca slumped back in their seats, exhaling in unison. The Falcon shuddered as it cut through the atmosphere, and settled as Solo and Chewbacca guided her through the toxic skies of Sircon on approach to the capital. Chewie keyed in coordinates while Solo finalized their landing arrangements with Motok Flight Control, securing a landing bay in one of the largest facilities on the edge of the city. There was good and bad about hiding out on Sircon, Solo reasoned. The good was that the local government was as corrupt as the Imperial one, and with enough credits, one could bribe or buy one's way to just about anything one needed. While there was ostensibly a working economy on the planet, the real business was made on the black market, dealing in goods and weapons and spice, and sometimes even slaves. If you could make money on it, it was probably being bought or sold in one of Sircon's cities. The bad was that Sircon didn't have much in the way of said cities. There was Motok, by far the largest and thus the de facto capital, and perhaps a half dozen others scattered across the planet, but that was it. There was a good reason for this. Sircon cities were all domed, enclosed structures with regulated temperature and atmosphere controls. When the planet had been colonized, long before the fall of the Republic, it had been an ideal, almost idyllic world, situated perfectly in the habitable zone from its single star. Since then, the atmosphere had turned poisonous, as industrial and commercial ventures had filled it with toxins. The temperature had skyrocketed, the surface had begun to overheat, and the result was a runaway greenhouse effect that now meant you either lived under a dome or you died. End of story. Which meant the cities were overcrowded, overpopulated, and underserved. Lots of places to hide, sure, but not a lot of places to run. The Falcon glided toward the cluster of port structures as directed by flight control, and Solo brought the ship in a slow pass over their designated bay. Each bay was protected by a magnetic shield, a faint blue-tinged shimmering of energy, and several were occupied. Chewie leaned forward, peering past him, joining him in a survey of the visible ships parked below. In one of the bays, they could see an Imperial troop transport. Sentinel class. The Wookiee rumbled unhappily.
Maybe they didn't land a full complement, Solo said.
Chewbacca didn't bother to dignify that with a reply. Instead, he pointed one hairy finger, indicating another ship parked in a bay perhaps half a click from the Imperial transport. This one wasn't military, not at all, but rather a 1550 Lex, a luxury yacht with a bright blue stripe painted along the top of its hull, running from bow to stern. Chewie snuffed a question at him.
Looks like her, yeah.
Chewie snuffed a second time, lower.
We'll see.
Solo flicked the throttles, brought the Falcon through a 180 that reversed their direction, put them into a hover over their designated landing bay, then set the ship down onto its pad as gently as if he were kissing a child on the nose. Chewie began securing systems, and Solo set the engines to standby as opposed to full shutdown. The Wookiee looked at him.
Like you don't think we'll be leaving in a hurry?
Solo said. The Wookiee considered, then huffed in agreement. He rose, grabbed his bowcaster from where it rested in the empty navigator's chair behind where he'd been sitting, and looked at Solo again.
Well, let's hope you won't need it.
They stepped from the cockpit and down the short hall to the circular main compartment. Chewie rumbled, growled, then barked as Solo lowered the ramp, and they stepped from the ship and out into the bay.
I don't know, Solo said. You can pack a lot of stormtroopers into one of those Sentinel shuttles.
That got another chuff in response.
Look, it's a big city, pal. We don't know if Vehement's after him. It could just be a coincidence, right? And even if they are searching for EMAT, they're gonna be spread out. So we keep our eyes open, we play it smart. We'll be fine. In and out. Nobody'll even know we were here.
They started across the landing bay toward the main doors that led to the port. The Wookiee rumbled again.
I'm trying to maintain a spirit of optimism here, Chewie,
Solo said. He was getting annoyed.
If you're nervous about this, I'm going to take this moment to remind you that this was your idea. I wanted nothing to do with it, remember?
The Wookiee woofed as Solo reached for the doors and keyed them open. They slid apart, revealing a long, wide, bustling promenade that stretched as far as the eye could see, with more corridors leading to the other bays extending from either side. The noise was immediate. Voices arguing, shouting in a dozen languages, speeders whizzing past, droids yammering in binary, vendors hawking their wares from their stalls. They stepped through, and Solo hit the door controls, locking the Falcon safely behind them.
Look, relax, Solo said, turning to face Chewbacca. We've dealt with stormtroopers before. It could be worse.
The Wookiee rumbled softly. Solo spun, watching as the crowd parted to reveal an oddly tall and lean figure some 15 meters away, leading a group of three humanoids. It took another half second before Solo could recognize the leader as a droid, unlike any he'd ever seen. Its face was a mockery of protocol droids, flat, matte gray with an extended collar flaring out around it, like some steel flower. Its chassis was humanoid, but seemed only partially completed, ending mid-torso and revealing the whirling machinery sunk into its waist. Its legs were long, an imitation of human skeletal structure, like its arms. It carried a heavy blaster pistol in one metal fist, and a longer, crueler-looking blaster carbine in the other. The three behind the droid, a Kubaz, his long snout visible even from that distance, a Gron, and a human, were likewise moving their weapons into position.
Han Solo,
the droid said, and even across the distance its voice was clear, clipped, metallic like the rest of its form.
Jabba says hello.
Then the droid opened fire. Chapter 4. Pressing Questions.
Put them against the wall, Beck ordered. If any one of them tries anything, kill them.
Mem, the sergeant said, then jerked his arm. You heard her. Move!
The stormtroopers were in motion at once, tossing tables aside and grabbing the cantina patrons as they went, throwing them roughly toward the wall at the far side of the room. Protests weakened by the threat of blaster rifles and Imperial impatience were voiced, but none with conviction. Beck watched with contempt. It hadn't been a nice cantina to begin with, and she doubted any of the criminal riffraff populating it were that nice either. When the squad had finished, there were 14 patrons against the wall, plus the bartender, his one humanoid server, and a service droid. Beck looked the group over as two of the stormtroopers began patting each one down, her eye clicking softly as she viewed each of them through various spectrums. Three had holdout blasters tucked away. One, an old red-hued Twi'lek, was reaching for his. She drew her blaster and pointed it at his forehead. "Don't," she said. The Twi'lek didn't. Beck waited until the stormtroopers had disarmed the group. Not a one of them, including the droid, had been without a weapon. The pile on the only upright table was substantial, including two vibro-knives, as well as the standard assortment of heavy and light blasters, plus one thermal detonator. "I'm looking for a man," Beck said. From her pocket, she pulled her small holoprojector, keyed it, and brought to life the file image of EMAT, 3 years out of date at the least. She held it out for all to see. "This man, a human, he is who I want, not you. The sooner you tell me where to find him, the sooner you can go back to your drinking." Along the wall, the patrons shifted uneasily, some casting glances at one another, the rest staring at Beck. There was a satisfying fear in their expressions. "If you do not tell me where I can find him," Beck said, "I'll have you all executed." The bartender spluttered, then found his voice. He was a Deveronian. One of the two horns rising from the top of his head cracked and missing its point.
"You can't do that! We haven't done anything!"
"I'll come up with something."
"The Empire has no authority here!"
Beck sighed, stepping forward until she was scant centimeters from the bartender. He backed so hard against the wall, she thought he might try to push his way through it. She smiled at him.
"I am the authority here."
"We haven't seen him!"
This was the Twi'lek. Beck looked at him, flicking her eye into thermal. Twi'leks normally ran hotter than other humanoids, and this one was no exception. But his heat signature was even more elevated than normal for his kind. Fear could do that. Along with the thermal signature, her eye gave her pulse rate and respirations, and all these, used properly, could act as a makeshift lie detector.
"None of us have seen him,"
the Twi'lek added.
"You're lying."
Beck pocketed the projector, turning to head for the door. As she passed the sergeant, she said,
"Bring him outside. The rest are free to go."
She stepped out of the bar into the Motok port and wrinkled her nose at the assault of different scents. The place was filthy. The people were filthy, human and alien alike. Too many aliens, as far as she was concerned. And you could taste the corruption in the air. The whole planet was corrupt, like so many on the Outer Rim, like so many infected by the Hutt's criminal taint. The Empire was occupied by matters elsewhere, Beck knew, but she sincerely hoped that one day the Emperor's eye would turn toward these unlawful pockets of barely maintained civilization and chaos and bring much-needed order. She would very much enjoy taking part in such an operation. The sergeant emerged with four of the troopers, leading the Twi'lek, his hands now in binders behind his back.
"I don't know anything,"
the Twi'lek said.
"But you're lying. I know you're lying."
Beck gave him her sweetest smile.
"And since I know you're lying, I know you can tell me the truth. There are two ways for that to happen. The easy way is you will just tell me. The hard way involves an interrogation droid and a detention cell aboard my Star Destroyer."
The Twi'lek blanched. his red skin fading to something closer to pink.
So, I think it's an easy choice to make. But then again, I'm not you.
He wasn't... he wasn't dressed like that,
the Twi'lek muttered.
Not like in the Hollow, but I saw him this morning, inside. He wasn't here for long.
What was he doing?
I don't know. He was waiting for someone, I think.
To meet someone?
The Twi'lek nodded quickly, making his leku bounce.
That's what I thought, yeah.
And did he?
This time he shook his head with the same vigor, making his head tail sway.
No, he kept watching the door, and then he just got up and left. He just left.
To go where?
I don't know. I swear on the Maker, I don't know.
Beck used her eye, checked his vitals again. If anything, the Twi'lek was now more frightened than before, but nothing she could see told her that he was lying. She made a face and turned away, gesturing to the sergeant to release him.
You're letting me go?
The Twi'lek twisted his head, watching as the sergeant unfastened the binders. He brought his freed hands up, rubbing his wrists.
Thank you, thank you!
Beck paused.
You know the man was a rebel?
I thought he might be, maybe.
Beck sighed, suddenly tired.
All rebels and rebel sympathizers are to be shot on sight, she said.
She didn't even have to look at the sergeant, didn't bother to turn around. There was a fraction's pause, then the sound of the sergeant's blaster firing. And a moment later, the heavy thump of the Twi'lek hitting the ground.
Get the body out of the street,
Beck told the sergeant, again producing her holo projector. She tabbed the comm button, and a moment later, a miniature and shimmering projection of Captain Hove appeared.
Commander, any progress?
I have confirmed sighting as of this morning. I want a full detachment brought down immediately. We'll begin a grid search of the city, working out from the port.
Hove's image turned away from the camera, and Beck watched as he relayed her orders to some unseen officer on the Vehemence Bridge. He turned back to face her.
You're certain he's still on planet?
You're better equipped to answer that than I, Captain.
We've had no ships take off from Motok since we arrived.
Beck started to form the word good, but something in the way he'd said it made her hold back.
You sound uncertain, Captain Hove.
No, Commander. No takeoffs, I assure you.
But...
Hove shifted in the image, pulled at the high collar of his uniform.
There have been a handful of landings. Nothing really out of the ordinary. One of them gave us pause, but we let it through.
Tell me.
Light freighter, the lost and found. We cleared it for landing about half an hour ago. Its registration checked out, but it was out of date. I checked after we'd cleared it, and it matches the markings of a ship that was put on the watch list a couple of days ago. Some unpleasantness leaving Tatooine, I gather.
Why didn't you inform me of this earlier?
Sir Khan is notorious as a hub for pirates and smugglers, Commander. It's not uncommon for a vessel to use an alias. It wasn't until I checked that I saw it was a known vessel.
Which bay?
I hardly think this matters, Commander. I just wanted to inform...
I didn't ask what you think, and I certainly don't care, Captain. Which bay?
Hove, in her palm, looked away, checking something out of sight.
Bay 732. But I really don't see what...
Beck jabbed the emitter in her hand, making Hove vanish mid-sentence. They were in the 1800s, with Bay 732 more than a kilometer away.
They're here to rescue him, she told the sergeant.
She began to run, the clatter of the stormtroopers close at her back.
Part 2. Chapter 5. Misfortune.
Look! Solo said. Can we talk about this?
The answer came in the form of another salvo of blaster fire, ripping overhead, narrowly skimming the top of the overturned Zsfruit cart that Solo had taken cover behind. Shards of masonry showered down, pieces of it vaporized into a fine dust that made him sneeze. He glanced to his right, checking on Chewie. The Wookiee had taken cover behind what had once been a shiny and brand new land speeder. It was big enough to shield Chewie from the bounty hunter's collective fire. But unfortunately for the vehicle, it had now been hit in a dozen places, and its windshield reduced to shards. That land speeder's owner was not going to be happy when he or she got back, Solo thought. The Wookiee was reloading his bowcaster, palming one of the clips from his bandolier and slapping it into place on the weapon. He grunted at Solo.
I am trying to think of something, Solo said.
There was another salvo, and Solo shifted in his crouch. Chewie was watching him. Solo nodded, and both moved at once to return fire. The bounty hunters had similarly gone for cover. The droid was positioned behind one of the heavy support columns along one side of the promenade. But the Gron was, for the moment, exposed. Solo snapped off two shots in quick succession. The first catching the Gron high on the left shoulder, the second missing. The Gron cursed in Huttese. Chewie roared, and Solo heard the bowcaster's distinctive snap, catching in his periphery the flight of the long, slower-moving bolt launched from the weapon. The pillar the droid was hiding behind took the hit, but a significant chunk of the permacrete vaporized. Solo ducked back down, exhaling and adjusting the DL-44 in his hand. This was not going well. They were wasting time. And with all this shooting, it wouldn't be long before an Imperial parade of bucketheads showed up to investigate the commotion. Something ominously heavy clattered onto the ground nearby and rolled into view, whining as it approached steadily and rapidly. Without thinking, Solo lashed out a foot, the toe of his boot catching the metal ball and sending it bouncing off one of the side walls of the now nearly deserted promenade. An instant later, the ball exploded, and Solo felt a moment's gratitude that this part of the port had cleared almost instantly when the shooting had begun. Bounty hunters came in all shapes and sizes, all of them with their own axes to grind. Some, he knew, were very careful on the job, precise and professional. You could respect people like that, even if you didn't agree with the way they made a living. Others, though, cared about nothing but obtaining their target. If innocents got in the way, well, that was just too bad for those innocents. They were collateral damage, just the cost of doing business. With the firepower these guys were carrying, Solo was certain they fell into the latter category and not the former. But there was one thing that his experience had taught him was universal to all bounty hunters.
I've got the money, Solo said. Listen to me! I have Jabba's money!
The firing stopped, and Solo snuck one eye clear of the cart, tightening his grip on his blaster pistol. All four of the bounty hunters were still behind cover, but they had heard him, and he knew he had their attention.
I'll give it to you! All of it!
Chewbacca looked at him in amazement. Solo ignored him.
All of it! It's yours! Just let us go!
Where?
The droid's voice, metallic and ill-modulated.
It's on my ship. You let me go and get it, I'll bring it to you.
Solo?
The droid sounded disappointed.
If I let you go to the ship, you will not come back. We will come with you.
You come with us? There's nothing to stop you shooting us in the back once you have the money.
Correct.
So you can see why I'd think that's kind of a rotten deal.
We can offer you another deal. We can kill you here, then take your ship and your money.
I don't like either deal,
Solo said. Chewie snorted in agreement. Solo sighed and looked down the promenade in the direction he was facing, away from the bounty hunters. There was a squad of Imperial stormtroopers approaching, led by an officer with a blaster in her hand. Solo quickly holstered his pistol and looked at Chewie.
Put it down, he hissed.
The Wookiee looked at him like he was mad. Then in the direction Solo was pointing, And then he got it, and promptly put the bowcaster aside.
"Rebels!"
Solo shouted, pointing roughly in the direction of the droid. The bounty hunters chose that moment to resume firing, and the officer and stormtroopers immediately scattered, splitting into two groups and pressing themselves against either side of the promenade. Blaster bolts sailed over Solo's head, smashing into the walls and ground farther down the wide hallway. Solo pushed off from the cart and began running low toward where the officer had taken cover behind another of the pillars. More shots peppered the wall behind him. He felt the heat of one of the bolts singe his hair as he slid in next to her, breathless and not needing to work very hard at pretending to be scared.
"They're crazy,"
Solo said to the Imperial officer.
"They were going for one of the ships, and then something happened. They just started shooting. I think they're trying to escape."
"Stay back," the woman said, pushing him against the wall. She was tall, almost his height, a blonde with one blue eye and one cybernetic eye, glowing an infernal red and set in a black metal housing fused to her skin. It was frightening to look at. The scar that ran vertically from her hairline to her jaw along that side was deep, and the wound that had made it must have hurt terribly.
"How many?"
"Four, I think,"
Solo said, making his eyes wide.
"Two aliens and a droid. They're being led by a human."
The officer's jaw clenched, and she pivoted, motioning to the troopers in position across the way.
"Set for stun. I want them all alive. We'll need an ion blaster."
"I can help you," Solo said.
"You've done enough, citizen. Stay here where you're safe. I want to speak with you once these traitors are in custody."
My servant, he's trapped up there."
Solo pointed to where Chewbacca was still hunched down behind the damaged land speeder.
"I need him. He's very expensive to replace."
"We'll clear the route,"
the officer said. She motioned again to the troopers opposite her, giving them the go signal. They moved the way stormtroopers always moved, quickly and precisely, and as a unit, advancing in groups, giving one another support fire, making their way quickly up the promenade. The bounty hunters were shooting back, either unwilling to surrender their bounty to the Empire, or, more likely, not yet realizing that the battle they were fighting had changed, that they were no longer exchanging shots with Solo and Chewbacca. The group reached the land speeder, and Chewbacca scooped up his bowcaster and ran in long-legged strides to where Solo was waiting for him. They each spared a glance back up the promenade.
"This is Commander Beck of the Imperial Security Bureau,"
Solo heard the woman shouting.
"Throw down your weapons and surrender, and your lives will be spared."
Chewie huffed.
"Definitely time for us to go,"
Solo agreed. The cantina was in a cargo hold, and the cargo hold was in the 1550 Lex they'd seen on approach. It had taken only a moment to double-check that the ship was the one Solo and Chewie thought it was. Misfortune. They slipped into the docking bay without difficulty and without anyone paying them any attention. They approached from the back of the vessel, where the cargo ramp was down, and a very taciturn Shistavanin was leaning against one of the hydraulic struts. They could hear music and voices coming from within. The Shistavanin held up a clawed paw, stopping them.
"Cover is 15 credits,"
he growled. He raised his lupine head, muzzle canted up to look Chewbacca in the eyes.
"20 for the walk."
"I'm a friend of Delia's," Solo said.
"Everyone's a friend of Delia's. 35 credits, buddy."
"Robbery,"
Solo told Chewbacca, fishing the chits out of one of his pockets. He dropped them into the Shistavanin's hand.
"Don't spend it all in one place."
They climbed the ramp into what had once been the substantial and reasonably spacious cargo hold of the ship. Technically, Solo supposed it still was the cargo hold of the ship, but that was no longer the purpose of the space, nor had it been for a very long time. Instead, there was a long bar top against the fore-end bulkhead, with transparent cases behind it displaying bottles and bottles of the finest liquors the galaxy had to offer. A half dozen small, round-top tables filled the rest of the space, with two or sometimes three seats at each, and most were occupied. The freight that got moved aboard Miss Fortune was primarily liquid in form, frequently intoxicating and generally overpriced, but it came with the benefit of being served in just about the most discreet location possible. Miss Fortune needed no permits, paid no taxes, and when the local authorities got wind of those two facts, could quite literally pick up and fly away at a moment's notice to set down on some other world and repeat the process all over again. For people who made their living on the go, traveling from world to world, smugglers, scouts, mercenaries, it was the perfect place to have a safe and quiet drink and maybe catch up on the latest news. Solo led the way to the bar, threading between the tables and bellying up between two empty stools. The bartender, facing away from him, was a human woman with short red hair. When she turned and saw him, a grin broke across her pale, lightly freckled face. Then Solo realized she wasn't looking at him, but at Chewbacca.
"Hey, Wookie,"
the woman said, pushing up on tiptoe and leaning out to wrap Chewie in a hug. Chewbacca chuffed, embracing her and lifting her off her feet. And Solo saw her cheeks color nearly the shade of her hair as she was squeezed.
"You're gonna break Delia, Chewie," Solo said.
Chewbacca rumbled, barked once, and set her back down. The woman steadied herself and ran fingers through her hair, catching her breath.
"Solo,"
she said. She was trying not to wheeze.
"Captain Layton."
Delia Layton grinned again.
"I heard you were dead, hon. I heard that Greedo splattered you all over Mos Eisley or something like that. I was almost sad about it."
"Almost?
You still haven't paid your tab."
"I've got the money."
"That's so."
She put her elbows on the bar, lines crinkling at the corners of her eyes as she smiled.
"Let's see it."
"I don't have it with me."
"I knew you'd say that."
"I can pay you. The money's on the Falcon."
Solo leaned closer, putting the two of them face to face.
"That and more, if you can maybe help us out."
"Always an angle with you."
"No angle, just information. I'm looking for someone."
"We're all looking for someone, Solo."
Delia straightened, pulled the hand towel from where it hung, tail stuffed into the belt at her waist, and began wiping down the bar. An old WA-7 series droid rolled up on her single wheel and set her tray on the bar.
"2 jewelry, an incandescent, and 1 bottle of boasts,"
the droid said. Delia began filling the order.
"Delia, we're in a bit of a hurry,"
Solo said.
"And that's new, how?"
"Can you help us?"
She set a bottle on the tray and popped the cap off.
"You haven't told me who you're looking for yet."
"Human male, roughly 20 standard years. Brown hair, brown eyes. He would have just arrived in Motok within the last 18 hours or so."
"So, maybe a third of the humans visiting Motok. That's who you're looking for?"
She set two glasses on the waitress's tray, then reached back for a bottle without bothering to look at it, flipped it over her head into her other hand, thumbed the stopper, and began to pour. The liquid that flowed out shimmered, turned silver, and ended up frothing clear in the glasses and smelling like sweet fruit.
"You're being uncharacteristically vague."
"He's looking to get off planet. He's expecting a lift."
Solo leaned in once more, catching the bartender's gaze.
"He's expecting a very specific lift from some very specific friends. The kind of friends you've been known to be sympathetic to."
To her credit, Delia didn't immediately react. Just finished filling the order and watched as the droid scooped the tray up and rolled quickly away. She waited, then slowly slid her eyes back to Solo. The suspicion in them was unmistakable.
"You've never been known to stick your neck out for anyone but yourself,"
she said.
"I'm his ride, Delia."
"I don't believe you."
"You think I'm working for the Empire?"
She glanced at Chewbacca, who had remained silent, listening. She shook her head.
But there are other people you're known to work for, Delia said. The slugs?
I wouldn't sell my worst enemy to the Huts.
We both know that's not true.
Okay, Solo said. Maybe my worst enemy. But that's not this. I'm this guy's lift, Delia.
I'm supposed to believe you've joined the Underground?
Solo shook his head.
No, no way. Absolutely not. This is a one-time thing.
Delia bit her lower lip.
Chewie?
The Wookiee nodded.
Straight up?
The Wookiee nodded again and huffed. She shook her head slightly, amazed.
They must be paying you an awful lot, Delia said.
Not nearly enough, Solo said.
Chapter 6. Captivating.
Execute Sigma 4,
the stormtrooper sergeant ordered. Instantly, two of the soldiers flanking either side of the promenade were in motion. A run-and-gun that they drilled so many times it required no thought to put into action. Advancing, firing, advancing. Past the cover of the half-destroyed landspeeder, Beck watched as one of their four opponents went down. The Kubaz, hit twice in quick succession by stun blasts. The remaining three seemed to hesitate, as if stunned by the precision and speed of the attack. And the second team of stormtroopers opened fire, then downing the Gron. The human, his clothing a mixture of salvaged military and refugee, all bundled beneath a filthy cloak, turned and tried to run.
Stop him! Beck said.
She needn't have spoken at all. The human hadn't made it four strides before he was shot in the back twice in quick succession. His body lit a sudden blue, suffusing him with charged particles that overloaded his nervous system all at once. Through her cybernetic eye, she watched as the human's biosigns went wild for an instant, then collapsed to baseline as the electrical impulses that drove his brain were suddenly and savagely forced into reset by the shock to his system. It was the same process that allowed medical anesthetics to do their job, Beck knew, but somehow, watching it happen to a fleeing rebel made it that much more satisfying. That left the droid, some leftover model from before the Clone Wars from the looks of it, and it was crab-stepping out of its cover and raising its weapons in some mockery of surrender.
Do not shoot,
the droid said. The stormtrooper sergeant brought up the short-barreled DEMP gun from its strap over his arm and shot. The electromagnetic pulse hit the droid, and the machine locked, trembled, sparks flying in all directions as the ionized charge raced over its housing and through its circuits. The droid made a pathetic, almost childlike whine, then collapsed with a loud clank.
Efficient, Beck said.
It was quite possibly the highest praise she could imagine giving. The stormtrooper sergeant, designation TX-828, inclined his head ever so slightly in acknowledgement of the compliment.
Thank you, ma'am.
Beck slid her duty blaster back into its holster on her thigh and strode forward. On either side of the promenade, shapes began to appear. Those people who had exercised the better part of valor and gone into hiding when the firefight had begun. Shutters slid back on the shops, one after the other. And the whir and whine of droids going into motion melted into background noise as, slowly, communication and then commerce resumed. People stared at her and the stormtroopers as they advanced, the sergeant directing his troopers to disarm and bind the prisoners. Beck ignored them all, focused on the slumped, motionless form of the human lying on the ground, his body now almost entirely concealed by his cloak. She stopped, standing over him, then used the toe of her boot to nudge his body. For an instant, she saw instead the Rhodian woman who had taken her own life. The anger returned, and it made Beck push harder, forcing the unconscious human onto his back.
I've been waiting for this a long time, Emat, Beck said.
The man she was looking at wasn't Emat. She looked him over, assessing. The hodgepodge of salvaged military gear and pieces of body armor was recognizable as late-era clone trooper and mock Mandalorian. The weapon in his hand had been dropped, but her cybernetic eye immediately matched it to a schematic, a Mearsawn 4, normally used by police for its ability to switch between automatic blaster fire and semi-automatic stun. The hilt of a vibroblade hung from his belt, and a second weapon, a Blastech HSB-200 holdout, her eye told her, rested in a holster beneath his arm. 3 grenades on the belt, 2 of them stunners. Beck bent, took hold of the unconscious human by his collar, and searched him with her free hand. He had a pouch beneath his shirt, sensor shielded. She snapped it free from its cord, dropped the man, opened it, and dumped the contents into her palm. Credits, a holo print, and an ID card. She glared at the card, then threw it down before striding back in the direction she'd come. "Bounty hunters," she said, the words as though each was toxic. "They're bounty hunters, not rebels." She stopped short, glaring down the once again bustling promenade. "The other two, the human and the Wookiee, where'd they go?" TX-828, the sergeant, said,
"I don't see them. They must have run off when we moved on the targets."
"We were just played."
Beck felt the fury racing along her spine and fought to control it.
"They played us. Those two were the rebels. They're here to rescue Emat. I'd bet anything on it."
Behind her, she heard the droid grinding back onto its feet. It whirred, clicked, then spoke as she turned to face it.
"This unit is designated Captivator. This unit carries an authorized Imperial certification to hunt bounties. You have interfered with this unit and its partners."
Beck moved closer.
"If you have a complaint, droid, file it with the guild."
"The Imperial officer misunderstands."
Something inside the droid's head made a whizzing noise, then settled into a hum that, Beck suspected, was designed to be exactly as annoying as it sounded.
"The individuals are not rebels. The individuals are smugglers. The human is designated Solo, Han. The Wookiee is designated Chewbacca. The reward for their acquisition is significant."
"Acquisition?"
"It is more significant if they are acquired alive."
Beck looked the droid over, then at the others, the Kubas and the Gron, and the human, all of whom had reached various stages in their return to consciousness. The Gron, she noted, had been wounded, but it didn't look serious.
"Captivator,"
Beck said, "let's talk."
"This unit operates under self-actualization programming."
Captivator rotated on its central axis, turning its torso in a full 360, while its legs and head remained motionless. Its eyes, such as they were, flickered between yellow and white. Beck felt like the machine was staring at her.
"This unit has a self-improvement directive. This unit has acquired programming and modifications to make it the most efficient hunter in the galaxy."
"And an ego modification, I see."
"This unit has no ego. This unit relays facts."
"So you're saying you can track those two, Solo and the Wookiee?"
"That is correct."
Beck looked over the rest of the Captivator's crew. Now that they had recovered, she didn't know what to make of them. The Kubas, his long snout dangling from within his hood, whispered something to the human and the Gron, neither of whom had stopped staring at her since the discussion began. The droid was clearly the leader of the team, and knowing what she did about bounty hunters and how they worked, Beck suspected that there was some truth to what Captivator was telling her. She had ordered the whole group pulled into the relative privacy of one of the small shops lining the promenade, then directed the sergeant to clear the space. It had been a restaurant, alien-focused fast food, and the smell of grease was heavy, mixing with spices from worlds Beck had likely never heard of, let alone visited. The human proprietor watched them suspiciously from the far corner, under guard of another 2 stormtroopers. Beck considered what she knew. "You can identify their ship," she asked the droid.
"Confirmed."
"Do you know where it is?"
"Negative."
Captivator clicked. A line of lights on its torso flashed.
"But it will be a simple matter for myself and my partners to locate it."
"I want a description of that ship," Beck said. "Its name. Its real name. Not whatever alias it may have used to land." The bounty hunters arrayed behind Captivator shifted uncertainly, exchanging glances.
"Cannot comply."
"Not only can you comply, you will comply. Or your next job will be on Kessel, and your partners will find themselves toiling in an Imperial penal colony. Name, description,